Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remakers, Mark. Here we are in the fourth episode in our What's Up Doc series, where we will be discussing the documentary King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks, Jeremy Nilsson, Lee Harcade, Mark Josting, and I am Kyle Dillahunt, and I will be your host once again this fine evening. So, in this, our fourth edition of What's Up Docs, we will be talking about King of Kong, which is a documentary about the classic video game Donkey Kong. Jeremy, this was your pick, so I'm assuming you had seen this before, yes?
Yes, I have, many times.
Gotcha. As had I. As usual, we're going to go kind of down the line here and see what other people knew. Andy, had you seen this before?
No, I had heard of it from Jer, but until viewing it for this series, I had not seen it.
Okay, very good. Lee, how about you? Had you seen this documentary before?
Nope, never heard of it until Jer mentioned it.
Cool, very good. And how about you, Mark?
I had heard the name, but that's the barest sniff that I had of this movie.
Barest sniff. I like that. It's good. So we'll do just a brief summary of the movie so that we kind of know, or we can kind of provide what the movie is about. Essentially, this movie is about chasing video game records, specifically the record for Donkey Kong. So this takes place in, boy, what years did this take place? I don't even remember.
2007 was when the documentary came out.
Yep.
And I believe the records were set a year or two before that. So it was in the mid-2000s somewhere.
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, Donkey Kong came out, what, like 84, 85, something like that. They had kind of the first sort of world records
82.
Started.
82. 82 was when Billy Mitchell first had his record.
Got it. Thank you. Appreciate it. And so it's kind of an ongoing chase of many different video games and their records, but this one focuses especially on Donkey Kong. There are two primary characters, Billy Mitchell, who we've mentioned already, who it was a early classic gamer and held the record for many, many, many years of like 580,000 or something like that. And we'll kind of continue to talk about what it ended up being as we talk further about the documentary. And then there is Steve Wiebe, who is a kind of up and coming, down on his luck, just got laid off. I don't know, just kind of a plain guy who things never quite went his way, who has a Donkey Kong game in his garage, and he's going for it. He's just trying his best and trying to break that record. And it's a back and forth between these two as far as like kind of hero and villaindom, and it is just fascinating. Anything else that you guys want to add, knowing that we'll touch on a little bit? Anything else that I missed as far as kind of a summarizing of the movie?
I just want to throw it out here right at the very beginning that without hyperbole, this movie is one of my favorite movies to come out in 2007. And I think Billy Mitchell should be included in every list of top movie villains.
I think that is entirely justified.
He's up there with Darth Vader, Hannibal Lecter, Billy Mitchell, like that. That's the tier he should be in.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you at all. It's so good. And as often the case, like the villain is held up by those near him. So it's not just the villainy, it's everybody else who sort of kowtows to him.
Yeah, but I actually kind of like Darth Vader. I don't like Billy Mitchell.
You could see where he was coming from a little bit. Funny. Well, speaking of heroes and villains, that's the first thing that we want to touch on here. This movie, for one, is extraordinary. And one of the reasons why it's extraordinary is because of the cast of characters that they're focusing on. Jer, why don't you start that off since this was your pick and you had a great start to that when we were discussing it prior.
This movie works because Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell are so polar opposite of each other and so they're almost caricatures of movie heroes and villains, but they're real people. And I think that's just a fascinating dichotomy and how the movie tries to flip flops between their two stories. And really, ultimately, this is Steve Wiebe's story. It's his Joseph Campbell-esque hero's journey to get his record legitimized and prove that he is this world renowned Donkey Kong player and that he has the high score. And Billy Mitchell's seeming attempts to maintain his stranglehold on his past record from 1982. And then surrounding both of these people, mostly surrounding Billy Mitchell, but surrounding them and layering over the top of all of this is sort of the competitive retro arcade game community. And man, are they weird. The documentary does a great job of kind of highlighting some of these people and how they sort of fit into this story. But then also there's a lot of them that don't really fit into the story, and they're just like the people that are in these crowds, and they're just fascinating characters. And then some of them have really weird connections to all this. Steve Wiebe bought a board from this guy, but this guy was like the old arch rival of Billy Mitchell back in the day, and so there's bad blood there, and like all of just this confounding levels of like soap opera like storylines going on in the background of this movie. And it's just it's so intriguing and so fascinating to watch.
And the board of which was, or the reason for that, that board being from someone who is essentially like, you know, the arch nemesis of the other person, was used to completely obliterate what could have been a record performance. So because that, you know, because he was using a board that he just bought from a guy who happened to be that person, they did not allow a record to happen. Like, it's just this like scheming behind the scenes, and it's just crazy. Like, everybody's taking themselves so seriously. And for once, I didn't mind it. Like, I was like, yes, heck yes, you should be that worried or this, you know, this serious about it. But yeah, just craziness.
And it should be noted that the guy he bought, that Steve Wiebe bought the board from, goes by the name Mr. Awesome.
And he drives the Awesome Mobile or something.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wanted to know more about that relationship. How did those two guys hook up?
I think it's, I'm guessing like it's in the back of, there's got to be video game magazines for this, like classic video game magazines where like they've got forums or, you know, I don't know, something like that where, or I guess this was fairly early on in the web. So there was certainly some web presence, but man, not a lot.
I'm sure there was chat rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was IRC.
Yep, Usenet groups, forums. Yep. IRC. Yeah. You got it. Yeah, Jer, your point about this if being a, you know, sort of Joseph Campbell-esque hero's journey is spot on. And a lot of that is just in how the documentary is made. And we'll touch on some pieces of that to come in a little bit. But just the who the characters were the start of it. So Steve Wiebe was someone who, you know, had just lost his job, you know, was, you know, basically got like beat up on his last playoff game. So he never like got to be the baseball champion. It was felt like he was like always second place at everything. And he just wanted to be first at something. Right. So they start and they're building this story up. And then they talk about like the amount of work that he has put into it. I mean, just everybody that they interview from family to friends, you know, it's establishing his style. And Billy Mitchell, you know, was basically from the get-go kind of the person to beat. And it didn't necessarily start out as that he was a villain, but he was just sort of, you know, the one who was really, really good at Donkey Kong. But then, you know, the characters kind of pivoted as things changed a little bit. It was just incredibly well done and nothing felt forced, which was absolutely incredible to me. It just felt like it was the way the story would have been told if it was fictionalized too. And they had every ability to have creative license. Like they didn't have to, it was just so well captured and so good. Mark, you had a note about kind of how Billy changed throughout the movie. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, I totally agree. That's just the way that character arcs and development are established throughout this film is really wonderful. And I think Billy is the best example of it, where when we meet him early in the film, I mean, he's not a villain. He's kind of the champion of video gaming. I want to call it retro gaming, but in 1982, it wasn't retro yet. You know, Billy is the guy who is like the face of the industry, and he's good at it, and it's good for the industry. And it's only as time goes by and he's holding on to that record, and that we get to see like a more conniving sort of side of him, and we start to see him as a villain, and I just adored that progression. I thought it was really, really well done.
Just as an interesting aside, also, I have read some interviews and things after this documentary came out, and every piece of information that I can find says that Billy Mitchell really actually is like this. And this wasn't the documentary, the filmmaker, like, manipulating things to make him the bad guy. He's actually like this. I don't know if that makes it better or worse, but...
I wonder if that's something that the filmmakers came to realize as time went on and they were filming. Like, you know, they first show him as sort of like Mark said, as like this golden boy and sort of an heroic figure. But then as they were filming, they're like, wow, he's kind of a douchebag. Let's make sure that we capture all of that.
And I'm sure that that's Billy's real life progression too. Is that, you know, when he's just a kid competing in the first ever video game tournament, that he's the one that's really good at it, and he's the best, and he should be proud of himself for that. And, you know, it's more pure. But as he gets older and, you know, people are trying to grab that title from him, then he just gets more miserly.
Yeah, and he, you know, hasn't had a challenge in that way. You know, like the scene that made me chuckle maybe the most is when they were one of the persons interviewing him was saying, like, he said, "Hey, do you know what my top score initials are?" And he's TGE? God. Nope. THE? Nope. He's like, "What tie was I wearing yesterday? American flag? Yeah, it's USA. Because USA is the greatest country in the world." Like, it's just oh my God. Jiminy Cricket. It was so ridiculous. Like, again, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you can't even write a character like that. It just has to be real. And boy, howdy, is it.
One of my favorites was late in the documentary when the lawyer guy, who was kind of his best, one of his gaggle that went up against him back in 1982, and they kind of maintained a friendship, and they were sitting at a booth in a restaurant, and this other guy was talking about, you know, everything I've seen about Steve Wiebe. I've met him. I've talked to him. I met his family. I really respect him. I think he's a very genuine, honest player. I think he's a really good person. Like, just kind of talking about that, you know, in reality, Steve Wiebe is a really nice stand-up guy. And Billy Mitchell sitting next to him, just shooting daggers out of his eyes at this guy. Yeah. And when the other guy realizes it, he just like shrinks into his chair. And it's just a beautiful moment.
And then they ask Billy what he thinks of him. He's like, "I don't know anything about the situation."
Yeah, exactly.
He completely cops out. Oh, man.
So am I to understand that Billy Mitchell's like crowning achievement happened in 1982?
And then he parlayed that into several hot sauce restaurants.
Okay, so then he's just... So...
Because he's a winner.
I would say that I don't know if I've ever seen anyone with more unearned confidence in my life.
Maybe Brian like, Koo.
Yeah. Well, if your apogee is in 1982, you can only surf that wave for so long. And then you have to accomplish something else.
Speaking of Brian Koo, there were certainly other characters in this movie, and we've, you know, talked a little bit about the people that sort of held Billy Mitchell up. And Brian Koo is one of them. Lee, you made the mention of this. Do you want to give a little summary of who Brian Koo was?
So it sounded like he was a Billy Mitchell disciple or something, and was just very much all about the Billy Mitchell brand, and was, I don't know, there's like a weird single white female dynamic between the two of them. And what annoyed me about him so much is when Steve Wiebe is playing Donkey Kong, and he's in, you know, there's a bunch of people in the arcade, And Brian Koo is going up and down telling everybody, hey, we're going to see a, what did he call it?
Kill screen.
Kill screen.
Yep. A kill screen, yeah. And he keeps saying that to everybody. And like people are playing their games and like, you know, and he's like, hey, if you want to see a kill screen, there's one coming up. And he keeps saying it. And I know he's just doing it to psych Steve out.
Yep. Yep.
And it's like, you need to get a life. Like, what a dork.
And then right after that, when they're showing Billy Mitchell's videotape, flipping the TV sideways, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's on the phone with Billy, and he's like, every eye in the place is on your videotape. No one's going to miss this. You could cut the tension here with a knife. Like, this is amazing. Everything is great. Like, you're so awesome. And like, it's just like, it's, yeah, now that you say that, it's very single white female.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He must have like a Billy Mitchell shrine in his home or something like that.
I honestly think it's probably that he hopes that it rubs off on him, because he has never been able to get to any kind of like any height of video gaming. Like, he doesn't have any records. He's spent all this time, like, he's never been able to do that. Like, he can't get there. And so he hopes that by hanging out with Billy Mitchell, like, it will help him get there, whatever that means.
That it's is just so really sad. Funny.
Yeah. some other characters were the gentleman that runs the website, whose name escapes me right now. I apologize. Twin Galaxies?
Are you talking about the company? That's
Walter Day.
Day.
Walter. Yeah. Thank you. I had Wally in my head and I didn't think that was right. So he basically oversees, or he is sort of taken it upon himself or been given the reins of like head referee for kind of retro or early video game record keeping. And so when people want us to basically say, hey, I've got the record for, you know, fill in the blank, whatever game, they send it to him. He watches it along with several other people in his kind of world. His character arc was pretty interesting in that I don't think he was quite as in deep as Brian Koo was, but he was definitely a Billy tag along. And it was very interesting from, again, a character development standpoint to see how he changed over time. And like, he became more human as Billy became less human throughout this whole thing. And he kind of realized, you know, the good that Steve Wiebe was bringing and the effort that he was bringing. So that was kind of cool development as well, I thought.
In some ways, to actually use a legitimate sports metaphor, it seemed like this was the Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire era of baseball, when they were having basically the home run contest throughout the season.
Yeah.
And they each were like racing this home run record. I feel like that could have been what this was, if Billy would have engaged with it, and if Walter Day and some of these other people sort of in charge or in the know could have embraced it. But instead it seemed like they were so afraid of losing Billy Mitchell as sort of this ambassador of retro games that they didn't want anybody to like take that away from him. And it seemed really weird that the competition of it, to me, would have elevated all of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the fact that Billy Mitchell was trying so desperately to hang on to that just makes it sad. You know, it's, you know, records are kind of, they exist so they can be broken. And, you know, if you're really as good as you think you are, then prove it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Who else caught your eye in the film?
Kid saying, wipe my butt.
Yeah, Steve Wiebe's toddler.
At one point in the movie, Steve Wiebe is taping, like video, VHS taping, him playing for Lord knows how many hours trying to get this Donkey Kong record. And he's, you know, I think above the 580, whatever that Billy Mitchell did, I think. No, maybe he wasn't quite yet.
Yeah, that was his record setting game.
He was approaching it.
Yep. Okay. But you hear from afar this kid going, "Dad, wipe my butt." he's like, "Buddy, hold on. I'm working on a record here." He's like, "Stop playing Donkey Kong." Like, so unbelievably funny. Oh my God. And it's It's just so real. Like, again, you couldn't write that. Like, no, if you wrote that and that was in a script, you'd be like, that's too far. Like, that couldn't possibly be real. But yes, it is 100% real. Speaking of family, I enjoyed his wife, Steve Wiebe's wife, a lot. I think she was kind of the audience proxy in a lot of ways, yeah. Where like something would happen and she'd pretty much just like throw her hands up in the air like, come on, like, what do we have to do here? I thought she was pretty great.
Andy mentioned before we started about the a couple other little minor moments.
I enjoyed among many moments. I don't want to disparage nerds because that's the pot calling the kettle black. But this movie definitely gives us a kind of a smorgasbord of nerds, a little sampler platter. They're just doing silly things. And I laughed aloud. I even guffawed at a scene where a gentleman, I believe this is at the Fun Spot scene, he's competing. Like, it's a contest. He's competing. He's trying his best. And I don't want to disparage anyone who's working hard at doing what they're good at, because I get it. It's hard work. But he's trying to do something on some classic video game console and apparently doesn't do well. Slams down the controller, huffingly unplugs his surge protector, walks out to his car with a duffel bag, opens the trunk of his Jetta, slams it in the trunk of his Jetta, and slams the trunk so hard that his car alarm goes off. And as he's walking away, he has to fumble for his key fob to turn it off. It just makes me laugh. It's so good.
I think the frosting on the top of that cake is that his pants were so high.
it's so perfect. It's like it is as if it was written like a scene out of Revenge of the Nerds or something like that. Like, that's what I expected this to be of, but it was real life and I loved it. It was beautiful.
Yep. So let's move on to talk about the documentary itself a bit. We've touched on kind of the story that it told, but I would love to talk about how it told that story. Mark, you had a good point about it being a really great form of a documentary in a lot of ways. Why don't you start with that?
Yeah, I go as far to say that this is an archetype for a documentary. It's really classically done. It's there's no narrator. There are very, very few titles. It's all told through through editing of just shots and interviews, and that's it. And I really respect that. I think it's a masterful job for taking such a simple approach.
It amazes me how much work they must have had to put in to like capturing those phone calls, right? So like some of it, I'm sure, you know, the path was laid ahead of them and they're like, well, we should probably have one person on Brian and one person on Billy. But like the amount of scenes that they had like that was amazing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, that was just like, just in terms of, you know, I think in the radio world or the podcast world of just getting good tape, you know, where they're just getting lots of good content and then doing a good job with putting the content together. And I agree with you, Mark. I think it was like your point of it being neutral was right on. You know, I think it definitely could have felt like it had an agenda, could have felt like it had a viewpoint, but mostly it was just telling the story, which I think was really cool. I don't feel like it went out of its way to make Billy Mitchell look bad. He did that. You know, they basically gave him the rope, right? It's, yeah, so well done. What else about the documentary did you guys find interesting or well done, anything like that?
I just think it's really great that you can take such a simple concept, which is a guy wanting to try to get the world's record Donkey Kong score, and find out that in that journey, there are all of these characters, all of this sort of built-in drama. Like, this isn't a dramatic set of events. This is a guy playing an arcade game in his garage and then going to an arcade for a contest and entering the contest and ultimately failing and losing. But this isn't a dramatic series of events, but to take that simple of a concept and turn it into a really, really engaging film is, I think a lot of credit is in how, like Mark said, how the documentary is put together and in the editing and sort of the building of this story. And I think that to the director's credit, he saw these engaging personalities and this story sort of unfolding around him and said, okay, this is how we're going to play this out. This is how it's going to work. And he uses such great cues with dialogue interposing with other dialogue, or like Billy Mitchell at one point saying, like, you know, the ball always bounces my way. All this stuff happens. So like everything kind of turns up great for me and I don't even try. But that means that some poor schmuck out there is getting the screws twisted on him. And then it like cut to Steve Wiebe, like, oh, I lost my job. Like they do such a great job of just taking all of this just dialogue and making it into the story. And then like Kyle will bring up all of these great music cues, and just, it's just so masterfully done in as far as writing and editing and building this story.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jer. I appreciate you handing that over. The music in this was so incredibly well done. They had some great tunes to start with. Pictures of You by The Cure, You're the Best Around from Karate Kid, right? Yep. Am I remembering that right? Yep. Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen were the ones that really caught my eye. It is so good. I mean, just absolutely perfect usage of that. The one that really was the best for me was Everybody Knows, which I like Leonard Cohen a lot. I'm not like a huge, huge, huge fan, but I do like his music and I like his voice a lot. But the lyrics were kind of in a montage of Billy and Steve sort of juxtaposed between the two, like the evil versus good. And the lyrics are, everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guys lost. And that showed like Steve Wiebe playing and losing, basically. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. And it showed Billy Mitchell there, right? Like, it's just, I mean, so good. And it's not manipulative. It's just so well done, right? It just feels right on. And I love that. So that was, yeah, so, so good. The other thing from a musical perspective was there was a bit where Steve Wiebe, of the many things that he is quite good at, is also a drummer. And he goes over to his kid's like tiny, tiny little kid drum kit and just kind of like throws down. It's pretty great. And they juxtapose that with him basically taking like a glass marker, like you would write on a car windshield, and kind of diagramming how he plays Donkey Kong, like dotted lines, straight lines, what he keeps an eye out for as far as when to go left, when to zig right. And it's to him playing this, like, you know, really, I don't know, intense jazz drum thing, like drum fills, basically. And then at the same time, his mom and dad, I think, were talking about how he was really good with his hands. And then it cuts back to him playing. And then there's times where, like, there's diagrams of what his sticks are doing. And you can see it going all over the place. Just so, so well done. Just really cool. What else caught your guy's eye?
This really isn't about the documentary filmmaking aspect, but it reminded me, what you said reminded me about how one of the things that I like about this documentary is that it shows how arcade gaming, especially retro arcade gaming, is a science. There's science to it. And Steve Wiebe became great at it, not because of his hand-eye coordination, although that's part of it, but because he figured it out. He scienced it out and figured out that if I go here, then this guy turns this way, and then this, you know, the pattern of the bouncing springs like changes slightly on the third one or whatever. And like he mathed everything out to win, as opposed to just playing it ad nauseum until he won. And so he became a better player because of how smart he is.
Yeah, a tremendous amount of work went into that. Absolutely. It is somewhat strange, but somewhat, I think, right on segue. Lee, you had a really great point about thinking about how sort of ridiculous it was that people were putting so much emotional stock into something that felt kind of silly. And I would love to hear a little bit more on that, if you don't mind.
Well, and I thought that when Jer mentioned this documentary, I pictured like those big, high production video game tournaments that you see online where, you know, it's a very big production. People are on a stage and they're competing against each other. That's kind of what I pictured. And then I saw this and it's, you know, it's very lo-fi. And yet, you know, everybody involved was really very emotionally invested and were taking it deadly serious. I just thought that that was so strange, you know, that they would care so much about something that, and it, maybe it's because I don't play a lot of video games anymore. I mean, I did when I was a kid, but even then, I don't think I would have cared who had the high score on anything. And these guys are putting so much of their lives into it that I just thought it was a little strange. But I guess, you know, everyone has their thing. You know, people enter cooking contests and put a lot of stock in that. So
I was going to say, Lee, I had a similar thought, but then I was thinking, really, there's on the on one level, there's no difference between these people and like professional athletes. If you think about it, they're
right.
People who are so dedicated to a certain goal and have a certain amount of talent to it that if you look at, you know, if you think about sports in a certain way, LeBron James is a fantastic basketball player, which means he's very good at putting a ball through a circle.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you know, on its basis level, like good for him. He does a lot of good in the world and he's very good at what he does, but he puts a ball through a circle, but he's the best at it, you know, or whatever it might be. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's their thing. It's everyone's got their thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you look at it now and how this has evolved and stuff like, I'm trying to think of what the big games are, League of Legends and some of these other video games that esports has sort of, it has become what they call esports and all of these big giant televised tournaments that are actually on one of the ESPNs. And there's millions of dollars in purses that are won on these video game tournaments. Like that all sprang from these people and these guys. Now these guys didn't evolve. They just stayed with Donkey Kong and Q-Bert and, you know, whatever else. But the people that are now winning millions of dollars playing, you know, Fortnite or whatever it is, you know, owe it to these guys for how they started.
Absolutely. That's a great point. So speaking of where things started and where they have come, Jer, why don't you give us a little bit of a where are they now update, if you don't mind?
Sure. So I've got some good news and bad news. Maybe that's not quite accurate, but so Billy Mitchell is still slinging hot sauce down in Florida. He's been relatively out of the public eye, except for a pretty significant lawsuit where many of his records got called into question and were investigated by Twin Galaxies at the behest of the Guinness Book of World Records because of concerns over whether they were manipulated footage or used on an emulator or some other things. Ultimately, they were all reinstated and they were determined that there wasn't enough evidence to prove that there was any foul play there. That just finished in June of this year. Those records were,
wow,
were put back in. So that's kind of where he's at. Steve Wiebe
did
is...
I see, I want to interrupt you though, Jared. Did I see that Guinness reinstated his records, but Twin Galaxies did not?
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I think he has a defamation lawsuit against Twin Galaxy right now. Twin Galaxies.
Yikes.
According to Wikipedia.
Walter Day and him having some problems. Steve Wiebe, who I met several years ago when he was here in town at the Mall of America to have a Donkey Kong a record attempt with the Guinness Book of Records folks here to watch it. The Mall of America had a screening of this movie and a Q&A with Steve Wiebe, and I have a signed poster from him in my house and chatted with him for 2 or 3 minutes. He's a great guy. And
well,
he
no
is
wonder
exactly,
you think Billy Mitchell's a dick.
Well, yeah. both Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell appear to be exactly as the documentary would have you believe. But probably most significantly in the where are you now, where are they now, is that since this documentary, the Donkey Kong world record has been broken over 20 times. Steve Wiebe hasn't held it since 2010. In 2006, I believe that's the events of the movie. That record held until 2010 when somebody named Hank Chen beat it. Steve Wiebe then beat it back and took the record again. And then Hank Chen beat Steve Wiebe's record and then beat his own record numerous times until somebody named Robbie Lakeman came onto the scene in 2014. And since 2014, Robbie Lakeman and another man named Wes Copeland have been going back and forth breaking the records. And so Steve Wiebe's record from the movie was 1,049,100 points. Currently, the record held by Robbie Lakeman is 1,260,700 points.
1,260,000.
1,000,000. Numbers are hard.
Math is hard. We determine this.
Math is hard. So yeah, for all the buildup of the movie, it has since been completely rendered moot. The other interesting thing of note is one thing that the documentary completely left out is that Billy Mitchell's record set in 1982 was actually broken in 2000 by Tim Zerbe, who I think was in the movie.
Hmm.
But they don't mention that at all. And so this whole like stealing the record from Billy Mitchell sort of plot line was a little bit kind of fabricated.
Huh.
Not to dump water on what I think is an outstanding movie.
Good water dumping, Jer.
Wah, wah. Yep.
Excellent. So last but not least, let's give our rating and scale for the movie. So again, 1 to 10, 1 being the worst documentary you've ever seen, 10 being the best, and a scale of your choosing. Jer, this was your film. Let's have you go first.
As I said at the top, this is one of my favorite movies that came out in 2007. I don't know what else came out in 2007, but this was excellent, and I will forever love it. I'm going to give this one 9.6 weightlifting gloves.
Nice. Good choice. Helps with marble madness. Keeps exactly. That chafing down. Nice.
Did you also notice right after that he was playing with his foot? Like his socked foot? That was so gross.
I did not see that. Jeez. I'm not upset that I missed that.
Yeah, he was the world record holder in the foot category. They actually mentioned that.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Okay, that makes a little more sense, question mark?
I'm guessing it's kind of a slim category.
Yes. It's the coulda, woulda, shoulda sort of thing. Like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mark, how about you? What is your rating and scale?
Well, I think this is a great film. I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 power pellets.
Ooh, nice. Wop, 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 wop. Good choice.
Thank you.
Andy, how about you? What is your rating and scale?
First of all, I just want to provide some context of the top grossing movies of 2007. Number 10 was 300. I'm not going to go through them all, but the first Transformers movie was there. Spider-Man 3, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. The highest grossing movie was Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Hmm. That being said.
I like this more than all of those.
Yeah. Little Miss Sunshine also came out there. That was a good one. Mm-hmm. However, I would give this movie, I also enjoyed it very much. I would give it 9.4 thin mustaches.
Nice. Right on. Thin, creepy mustaches. Mark, on to you. No, did you go already, Mark? Yes, you did. Lee, sorry. See, this is what happens when I don't go in any kind of order. I lose it. Lee, how are you? Wait, we do that at the beginning. Lee, what is your rating and scale?
I enjoyed it to a certain extent, not as much as everyone else, but I will give it 6 out of 10 shitty acoustic ballads.
Walter has got some work to do.
He's enthusiastic.
We didn't even talk about
that's
that.
That's true. I like his go-get-em attitude. I'll go last here. Earnest. I really enjoyed this. Yes, he was. I really enjoyed this film. I would probably give it a 9.2 out of 10 elevator levels. because I thought that was a fun mention in Donkey Kong. Cool. Andy, before we close out, you are up next in our What's Up Doc series. What is going to be your choice?
Going and continuing with our kingly theme and going along with my love of culinary contests, we're going to watch and discuss the 2009 documentary Kings of Pastry.
Ooh.
Which is a film about a group of 16 world-class French pastry chefs that are competing for the most prestigious craftsman honor in pastry chefery that I will not attempt to pronounce. And I've seen it before, and it's amazing to watch these people work, but to see what these guys go through to essentially get the highest honor possible in their field.
Cool. Speaking of dedication to their art, from Donkey Kong to pastry chefs. I like that. Cool. Well, good choice. I'm excited to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. And now we are also on YouTube. Just search for Remakers Mark. We're on Facebook at Remakers Mark, Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast, and Twitter at Remakers Mark. So please join in the discussion there as well. So, gents, this was really good. I'm glad that we had that discussion, and it was really, really fun. So, until the next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.